Radio Gorgeous. Listen anywhere, anytime.
Working 9 to 5. What a way to make a living. Barely getting by. It's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind and they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it. 9 to 5 for service and devotion. You would think that I would deserve a better promotion. Want to move ahead. The boss won't seem to let me. I swear sometimes that man is out to get me.
Hello, my name is Josephine Pembroke.
And I'm Donna Freed.
Welcome to Radio Gorgeous. This is Gorgeous Gossip with Josephine and Donna. And today on Gorgeous Gossip, we're going to be talking about...
starting your own business.
Why not? Because I've already got one, thanks.
Start another one.
Okay, all right, go on. I've got all the time in the world. We'll be talking about that, but first of all, let's talk about what's going on this week. Now, who's all for a week? I'm always asking you, Donna, because you have done a glut of interviews.
Exactly. Well, this week it is Zoe Pilcher, who wrote Eat My Heart Out, which, as I describe it, is a Fear of Flying by Erica Jong for the, as someone has said, for the gawker generation.
Who is she?
She's a real live wire. She's 29. She's an art critic at The Independent. She's going around all over the place. You know, she goes to Venice, she goes to Liverpool, she's covering all these art events. And then in her spare time, she's banging out novels.
Tell me why you chose the book, then.
It's the first book I've read, and I said, oh, wow, this isn't aimed at me. This is much younger than me.
Yeah.
But then it struck me as really funny. And the good kind of dark, black, tarry funny. You know,
right.
And so then I really.
And is there a heroine in it?
Yes, Anne Marie, and she hurtles through London and beyond. It's just great. Pick it up. Don't be scared. It's awesome.
Okay, and what's that called again?
Eat My Heart Out.
Eat My Heart Out. Great. And then I have interviewed the great and very famous Shirley Conran.
Yeah.
Who was Terence Conran's second wife. The first marriage was very brief. She was married to Terence for 7 years, and she wrote the first ever, she was the first person in Britain to write a feminist book, and it was called Superwoman. Mm-hmm. And when it came out, lots of feminists were shocked by it because it was about housework.
Mm-hmm.
But it was actually, they hadn't read it, and it's actually how to avoid housework. It's how to be clever in the home and to make the most of your time. And then she's got a set. So I bought it, the book, and it's fabulous. It's like a really old 70s copy of it.
Oh, fab.
And, you know, and it's literally, it's got a section on, you know, they call it sex maniacs, which now, you know, and it deals with rape in there.
Wow.
It's got a section of how to do your accounts. It's got sections of how to, it says all this, it's to make your life easier so you can have more time for leisure and pleasure. And just think, all women's magazines are like this. She invented, she worked on the Daily Mail, she invented the female section. And just think how famous that is now.
Wow.
She also worked with Terence for 10 years designing. And so she's been a designer, an interior person. She's been a blockbuster author. I mean, when I got Lace, I thought, I've got to read it. It came out 30 years ago and it was brought out.
I remember reading it.
Yeah, you read it.
Yeah.
Well, I've only just finished it because it's 750 pages. And it's,
you didn't tear through it like the rest of us?
Again, it's so fascinating because she wrote it because she wanted women to understand about sex and to be satisfied with their sex lives. And it's a way of getting to women. She says she's an educator. So the latest thing she's done is an online magazine, which you download on iTunes. And the first chapter's free. And it's called Money Stuff. And it's like a magazine. And the idea is it's attractive to young women, but also all women. And it's to get you good at maths without realising it.
Mm.
So it's a maths course. She took 10 years in the making, talking to maths people, trying to make maths interesting, trying to make it cover it up, that it is, it's actually, you're learning. Because if you're good at maths, you earn 30% more than people that don't. And she said women need money and women need to be independent. And that's how she's invented it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I remember we went to the very fabulous launch
yes.
of this at the Austin Martin showroom.
Yes.
And someone said, which they pointed out, which is something I thought really remarkable. that it's perfectly acceptable in this country to go into your child's, you know, math thing and say, oh, well, I was terrible at math, so I had problems. And it's something I just realized I do hear all the time.
Yeah, it's a kind of badge of honor that, oh, I'm really good at English, but I'm terrible at math.
And
especially with women, I'd say.
Yeah, and I don't think that's something an American parent would ever go into, you know, a parent-teacher conference and say, oh, well, I was crap at math, so it's fine if so-and-so is crap at
math. And apparently in France, it's not okay to be crap at math.
Yeah.
And we know Far East and Asian cultures, they are, math is more important than their own language.
Yeah.
And also, it's the only subject girls do worse than boys in.
Mm.
So we've got to up it because we're best at all subjects.
Keep up the average, girls.
Exactly. But so you can download it. You can download it for your daughter. You can download it for yourself. You can download it for your sister.
And or I think you can get it for boys too. I think it's perfectly applicable.
Yes.
You know, it's just she's aiming at it.
Yeah, she is.
Girls,
she is.
Just because it seems to be required.
So you just go to iTunes and you type iBooks, or you just type in money stuff apps sort of thing, and it comes up. And you can read it on your phone. You can read it. The whole idea is you read it on a tablet.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Great.
So you went down to Clerkenwell Design, didn't you?
I did. I went down to Clerkenwell Design Week. And of course, the building I chose to go into was the House of Detention. Seemed appropriate somehow. Anyway, but it was completely underground. It was a Victorian women's prison. And it was very strange because, you know, all these people had these gorgeous displays of the, you know, the work that they're doing or the products that they're selling in prison cells.
it's all there. You can have a look around.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the building.
Is it very grim? Has it got bad atmosphere?
Dank. I would say you have no idea what weather is going on above ground.
Imagine just poor women in there.
Yes, yeah.
Imagine being in a dark, dank. Oh, God, I feel for these women, and they probably did nothing as well.
Exactly. Whereas all the people I met there now are very industrious.
Yes, and they all had their own businesses.
Yeah, and that's what
sort of businesses were they?
It's all design, obviously design related. Businesses.
So what
and
sort
in
of
this
thing?
Place, I talked to these people, a Rum Fellow. They are importing fabrics and furnishings from Central and South America. They're keeping alive these women. They're getting these women's weavings. And not only keeping that weaving tradition alive, keeping these women employed, these women are sharing with each other, and they get to stay home.
Yeah.
And that strikes me as very empowering.
Yeah.
And it keeps a tradition alive as well as, you know, feeding their families. They're not leaving home. They don't have to leave home to work. This woman, Lucy Clive, she's an artist, trained as a textile designer, designed clothes, and now came out with her first furnishing fabric line, which was gorgeous.
Just to say, can you get the website details so we can put them up?
Absolutely, they'll all be there.
So let's have a listen to you chatting to them at Clerkenwell Design Week.
It's Donna Freed here on Radio Gorgeous, and a couple of weeks back, I went along to the Clerkenwell Design Week, which was May 20th to 22nd. It was a short week, but never mind. They packed in a lot in those couple of days, and I, in particular, went down to the House of Detention to see what was going on down there. It used to be a women's prison, and for some reason, it just seemed to fit. There's so much going on and such a convivial atmosphere, despite it being, you know, people had their exhibitions in prison cells. It was quite funny. I met Lucy Clive of Clive Work, who was debuting her textile line at Clerkenwell Design Week. I met Caroline Linsel of A Rum Fellow and her adorable baby. A Rum Fellow is a London-based interiors firm. They were debuting their Maya collection at the Clerkenwell Design Week, and she told me all about that. I also met Judy Clark of CVA Editions with her tables that she calls Bean Bender and Palette. And they are these amorphous-shaped tables. There's several different styles. And they're all birch and laminated on one side, birch tables. And she was launching them there also. I met the amazing Nicole Cross of the Wasatch Design Collective, who were out of Utah. I mean, most of the time, Utah exports Mormons, for the most part. That's their largest export. But these guys were amazing, and even NASA is interested in them.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings. Mwah.
I'm here at Clark & Well Design Week with designer Lucy Clive. Tell me about your collection.
Well, my collection has been quite a long time in the making and the coming. This is the fruition of quite a long period of work, and I look at a lot of different things, and it all sort of goes into my head, and then it comes out as these amazing creations that the people on the listening to the radio won't be able to see.
But can you describe, because this is your first collection of upholstery fabrics. You've worked with fabric before, you've worked in print, tell us a bit about your life as an artist.
Well, I trained at the Central School of Art and Design in textile design, and after I left college I ran my own business making clothes. I've designed the fabric and then had them made into clothes, and I started on a market stall in Camden Market and ended up in Hyper in High Street Kensington. And I also did a kind of big wholesale business, so I wholesaled all over the world. And then I got married and had children, so I had a bit of a period of not producing very much work, and now I'm back.
Now you're back. You're back with a vengeance. Back to your roots and your heart of textile design, but this time for upholstery.
Yeah, and for curtains, yeah.
So it occurs to me that if you're doing, if somebody's wearing something as opposed to something being on a wall or on a sofa or on a cushion, you can work much bigger.
Yeah, and it's a completely different concept, actually. Now, it took me a while to get my head around it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. It's like a complete image in and of itself.
Because it's really annoying if your eyes kind of dot it and you can kind of see the pattern or you can see where it's joined, so you've got to try and make it look like a whole thing.
Because when you say a whole thing, it occurs to me that sometimes your whole repeat of the pattern is like a painting.
Well, maybe, yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. A little bit, yeah. Wow. And some people have said, is yours, and we'll have pictures of it. Some people have said, and this has been an interesting thing for you, because I think once you make a piece of work, any type of work, whether it's writing or visual, once it's out there, it's not necessarily your own anymore.
Yeah.
And people have been saying to you, it really looks like batik or African.
Yeah, which is very surprising to me, because to me it doesn't, but it must be, I mean, I do love African things and I do look at them, but I wouldn't say it's one of my main influences, but it's interesting what other people see, as you say, you don't know. I think people like to have an explanation, so they like to, in their mind, be able to explain what it's like. So that's their explanation of it.
That's their reference.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly, mm-hmm. exactly.
And what are your references and your influences?
Well, I look at everything, from sort of primitive art, ancient things, to contemporary painting, to buildings, to natural, particularly the sea, because we spend a lot of time in Ireland and walking on the west coast, in the south coast of England. So I look at the sea a lot, and so I think that the kind of movement in them is that's a reflection of that. Which maybe even if did you know that, Donna? I don't know if you noticed
exactly.
that.
No. Yeah. Now I'm seeing it now.
particularly that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, with the refractions and
kind of
reflections and the movement.
But I think they're quite kind of architectural in a way, and I think stained glass is another thing that some people
have a reference.
Yeah. And that's another thing that I get quite excited about.
Yeah. With these very jewelled tones that you have.
Yeah, yeah. And that kind of backlit kind of effect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tell me how that design process happens. You create a design in your studio with watercolours, or what do you do?
I do a lot of drawing, and I use a lot of paintings with acrylic paints, and then I might do a bit of screen printing and sort of collaging, moving things around, and a lot of drawing, so yeah. It's a sort of building process, I guess. Yeah. Uh-huh. And also sort of looking at things and then trying something else. So you might make something that doesn't quite work, and then I would think, oh, I'll try that. And eventually you get something that you go, oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you very much. Well, and people can find you at www.clivework.com.
Exactly.
You are?
We are a Rum Fellow. It's myself and my partner that we probably launched about a year and a half ago. And the collection that we've launched here at Clark & Well Design Week is my collection. So we've developed this with a weaving cooperative in Guatemala. So all our fabrics are hand woven and hand embroidered by Mayan indigenous weavers. So the Weaving Cooperative's linked with a charity and a social enterprise. So it's a really nice setup. Basically, money goes back into education, training, whether it's training in weaving or training to be doctors. And the social enterprise focus on specifically on women and making sure they've got they have their to give them their own income. So, and what's great is with the weaving, the women can work at home, look after the family, run the house, but they can still earn their income whilst obviously multitasking, as women do.
As you are right now.
Yes,
with your baby daughter.
Yes, we've had a very VIP visitor to the show today. Yes. This is little Coco.
Oh, hello, gorgeous. So not only are you helping ensure that these women have an income of their own and that they can maintain their cultural lives, that they're not taken away from their families in order to earn an income, but you're also helping to keep this craft alive and keep the weaving, you know, this tradition of weaving alive.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's, you know, obviously it's a big part of their culture. It's been something that's, goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. And what's very interesting is that they still use exactly the same looms as they did hundreds of years ago, because all the skill and kind of technical part of it is all held within the artisan. So, you know, they don't, all they need is their, is their basic looms.
The fabric itself, the yarns themselves, are those dyed there? Are they created there and dyed there?
Yes, so there's a mixture of dyeing that goes on. So all the yarn they source locally. I mean, there's different ways of dyeing. Like the natural dyes, some come from bark or beetles. So they would experiment with different, plants, tree bark that was growing in their local area.
Fantastic. Thank you, Coco, for being on Radio Gorgeous. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
RadioGorgeous.com.
My name is Judy Clark.
And you have a stall here at the Clark and Well Design Week.
I do, yes, as CVA Editions. And CVA stands for Clark Visual Art, was my original umbrella name.
Excellent.
I might change it, but I'm not quite sure yet. We'll see.
And you're here, you have
coloured tables. I'm going to call them curved top tables. I've been looking for a group name for them, and so I've decided on curved top tables.
Excellent. But we were just saying that you started out designing wallpaper.
Well, I graduated from the Slade as an artist, and I have and still have an art practice. So I have work in galleries and in collections. But I think in the 80s, I've always been offered bits and pieces in design. Always. I worked for Pentagram when I was a student, and that contact led on to other things. And I was a single parent in the 80s, living in central London. And someone just said to me, I had some little designs. I'd been playing around with coloured pens. And someone said to me, well, if you can do 10 of those by next week, you're in, sort of thing. And so I did, and I was. And so for about 4 or 5 years, I worked in fashion textiles. I'd take my daughter to nursery. I'd start work at 10, work till 2, then pick her up, and then start work again at 9 o'clock, work through to midnight. That's how it went.
Wow. Yeah.
So eventually, I had a studio in Carpenter's Road in Stratford with the Acme. That's now the site of the Olympic Park. I went back to do my artwork there. But then I was offered a job in Sussex as the head of a short course department at West End College, which is a college which does short courses in a whole range of art and craft, quite high level, working with good people to teach them. And I was offered the job, and I was a bit reluctant, to be perfectly honest, but I'm afraid, the lure of a regular salary.
Regular salary and regular hours.
Yes, yes, house in the village, all of that. Yeah, good schools,
Yeah.
So I moved out to do that, and I did that for most of the 90s, actually. Then I went back into practice for a bit, got some Arts Council money, had a major award from the Arts Council for doing an installation. Got some work at Portcullis House. Again, design work for Portcullis House. So it's been, I've had this arts management thing that I have done just really for regularity, mm-hmm. for the regular salary, to be able to get a mortgage. It's all those practical things. It's mm-hmm. quite difficult to do when you're a creative person, unless you can get really established. And I never seem to manage to do that. It's probably because I just kept jumping around doing different things.
Yeah, it sounds like you're
I'm a bit
very
like
creative.
That. I'm a bit of a grasshopper. Yeah.
So how did the tables come about that you're here with?
I think it was a conversation I had with a friend of mine who was... I started to get interested in design, I think. Started to look at vintage design, started to recognise how design had evolved in the post-war period. And it seemed to me that you couldn't get coloured top tables anywhere. And everybody said, oh, you do those, I'll have one, you know, sort of thing. And so I evolved them, but then I wanted them to have something that made them rather specifically mine, which is why I decided to make them curvy-shaped, so to make the shape the individual thing. Because if you just do round coloured tabletops, it didn't seem to be quite special enough.
Well, but, fingers crossed,
yes,
and good luck.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, thanks for talking to Radio Fortune.
Oh, thank you.
Mallory Poulsen of Wasatch Design Collective.
Excellent. You've come over from Utah. Why specifically to London for Clark & Roll Design Week?
What was interesting for us was in Utah, we get to work a lot with different designs, but we're kind of on our own. So we wanted to be able to cross the seas and see what's going on, kind of see where our work fits in, because it is pretty unique with the origami that we've been researching and how we do our design. We wanted to see how the form and function would fit in with a design show like this that's so different from what we're used to.
All right, can you walk me around your sort of little showroom here and show
sure,
me what you
sure.
got?
Yeah.
All right.
So we'll start. This chair right here is designed by Christian, who is with us right now. And it's one of the pieces that I really admire looking at and seeing because he's so focused on the simplicity of the design. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see with the chair, and I don't know if you've been able to get your hands in it, but the chair itself is made of one piece of felt. That's mm-hmm. it. And on the inside, it's hollow. So the entire chair sustains itself, which is so
like
fascinating.
A seated hammock.
Exactly, exactly. It was one of those where he was finally able to tell his family that his math came to use. And so if you look at the chair, it's attached just by one belt. Mm-hmm. And then on the inside, it's hollow. If you look
wow.
at that.
Oh, wow. With a wooden base.
With a
yeah.
wooden base just to keep that round shape.
And the
but
stability.
The fiberglass resin on the inside is what is keeping that self-sustaining. If we go over, these bowls here are designed by Nicole Cross. And we used a laser cutter with these, and it's just balsa wood. It's super simple, easy material to work with and to attain. And again, we just went with these folding patterns and tried to figure out how we could create a very simple design with this intricate pattern.
It looks like, if I could, with it fanned out like that, mm-hmm. it looks like if you put it to, it's a fan, and if you put it together, you'd get a guitar, you know, the end of a guitar.
Oh, absolutely,
yeah.
absolutely.
It's just like, wow.
What we like about it, too, and again, what we were really hoping to capture with this simplicity is that it's not limited by us, mm-hmm. that anyone can go and take this piece and decide what it is for them. And I think that that's something that you don't always get with furniture design. It's, you know what this is, but we've had so many people come and put their hands on it, and it's a hat, or it is just an artistic display, or it's a bowl, it's a lampshade, anything like that, which then goes on to the vases that we've worked with. This is by a designer. Lara Britton did these, and with them, it's been really, really fun to see people get their hands on them because they want them to be water bottles. We're looking at these and seeing a lot of different options where we've gone with a candy holder to entice young kids and flower pots, but...
And a wine cooler.
Wine, exactly, yeah. exactly. You're just not limited by a simple design.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get to use so much more of it than you would normally. And you'll see the same with just the simple bowls that we have here. It's taking a very simple idea and bringing in an artistic taste and bringing in kind of that scientific math exploration, but being able to just make it simple and beautiful and something you want to see in your home.
Fantastic.
And we have the same origami that Christian used in his was used with Brett's chairs. Same idea, we're taking simple shapes, we're using origami. Our group itself studies origami for NASA. And we
really?
Have kind
Tell
of...
Tell me more about that.
Basic idea of it is really we are getting to take this information and we make furniture. But it's taking kind of this mathematical mindset and forming it into something that's functioned easily. But you'll see with all of the pieces that we have, the idea is that we can fold them out flat, and which was really easy for shipping.
I'll tell you.
You're coming from America, you really want to be able to roll these up.
Flat pack.
Right. And that was one of the benefits for them is that they take up so little space. And like you'll see with these pieces, we lay them out flat, roll them up, and you can very easily assemble them yourself at home.
Wow.
But I think
yeah, out of
that,
the one piece.
Out of one
Amazing.
Piece, right.
Amazing. Wow. Thank
fun.
You
it's
so
really
much.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks
Wonderful.
For talking with us.
Excellent. You can find all the information about all these designers, see what they're doing, see if they can get to you on our website, www.radiogorgeous.com. As if you didn't know.
Thanks so much, Donna. That was wonderful. Now, as we said, if you want more information about the people in the interview, you could just go to our website, radiogorgeous.com. Now, Donna, we're talking about, have you ever had a business idea?
I have had several business ideas, some of them more harebrained than others, but yes.
Have you done any of them?
No, but I am poised to.
Oh, come on. Don't leave me.
Don't worry.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Right.
It'll be part-time.
Okay.
It's like everything else.
All right. Okay, what's your idea?
Well, but I've always
Tell
done...
me on air, then. Bit safer.
Break it to
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
No, well, I just recently at my son's school fair, the summer fair, a friend who runs a chain of sushi restaurants taught me and another woman how to roll sushi. And I have learned another two times, but we were really good. And it was like three women dressed in black, one Danish, one Japanese, one American, all rolling sushi. It was totally awesome. And it's not that I would necessarily want to roll sushi because, you know, it was...
Day and night.
It was labor intensive. But this whole idea, I always thought when I moved here, I sort of wanted to do something with food, with, you know, maybe selling sandwiches in the city or something like that. Because again, you know, if you do work hard, but you get the cash proceeds, man.
Yeah. And people always want food, recessions or anything. People, and if you make something delicious and you could just do one, you know, two twice a week at different farmers markets.
Or a couple of festivals, do the festival circuit in the summer.
Oh.
Something like that, yeah.
So you could do Radio Gorgeous interviews at the same time.
Exactly.
Funny you said about sandwiches, because when I moved to Hackney and there was nothing around there, like shops or anything, this was in 1988, when I was 25, I decided to start a sandwich business on my bicycle.
Wow.
And it did really well. I lived off the money and the dole, because it was easy to be on the dole then. And I'd probably make 50 quid a week, but that was kind of enough, you know, for me.
Yeah.
And I literally used to make the sandwiches. In the morning, I'd go and get the bread at 8 o'clock, and I'd do French bread and brown bread. I'd do sausage of Dijon in a French stick.
Nice.
I did an all salad one with spring onions and avocado for like vegetarians. I also did BLTs. I did homemade hummus with cucumber and grated carrot. Did really well. And I had such diverse clients. Every day I used to go to these architects who were really nice. But I used to go to like Page Three Girls in studios. Then I'd go around the corner to Greenpeace in Islington. Then I'd go to massive warehouses of artists. And I'd go in and I'd end up chatting for hours to these artists because they were sort of so bored, but they'd buy the sandwiches.
How funny.
It was really good. And I used to go up on my bicycle and just along the canal at Hackney, just stopping in businesses.
Wow, you must have met so many people.
I did. And the diversity, as I say, you'd knock on, it was because it's all like photographers and things. So you'd knock on the door. And as I say, the Page Three Girls would like put their tops on and and just choose a sarnie, you know. So it was so, it was brilliant. I really enjoyed it. And even when I started my nightclub and Pussies Galore, even a few people I sold sandwiches to came down to me.
At least my sandwich client.
Exactly.
Really sandwich good. Maker and entertainer.
Yeah. So that was a little business I did that it didn't expand much, but it got me up in the morning. I always had food in the fridge.
Yeah.
Lived in a share house. All the men in my house, I make them bacon sandwiches if I was in a good mood, you know.
Yeah. And I would say, don't touch my shit.
Exactly. And I'd live off of hummus all the time. So, no, it was really, really great. I'm trying to think, have you ever done any other business? Did you play shops when you were little?
No.
You didn't?
No.
You didn't get, like, we used to get a table and sit on our street and, you know, just put toys on it. You never did that?
No.
God, well, I'm worried. This is
actually my deprived childhood.
No, I'm just worried. How enterprising are you? Yeah. Trying to find your roots.
The thing is, I've always worked and I've always worked hard. But saying that's the thing. The problem that I'd be nervous about working for myself is that, one, you have to. I like being number two, you know, in a business.
Oh, thank God for that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not after your job, Justin.
Yeah.
But no, I do, because it's a lot of responsibility. It's a lot of work. And at the end of the day, I like being able to walk away, you know, at quitting time. Unfortunately, as I noticed with my writing, procrastination is a big problem.
You know, procrastination, I'm sorry, that I've done a therapy course and they say it's to do with anger. I mean, I don't know what the link is.
Interesting.
But, you know, it's a self-destructive thing,
isn't it? Of course, yes.
You know, because you kind of, you do it and it's a bit like overeating or something. You hate yourself afterwards, you know? So you've got to get on top of it and think, why am I denying myself it?
Okay.
Well,
so see, and then I'm gonna be number one.
Now the only yeah, but as long as it's
watch
sushi,
out
sushi rolling. Anyway, you're number one on the air, my darling. You're number one. You're fabulous.
All right. So what other business ideas have you had?
Well, I trained to be a life coach,
mm-hmm.
and it was something to do when the kids were little because, again, I could do it on the internet at home in the middle of nowhere in Dorset where I lived. And then I found out you weren't meant to speak.
No way.
Yeah? I found out you're meant to, you know, it's interviewing people.
Oh, right.
But you're never allowed to give advice.
Oh, right.
So it was so impossible for me. I mean, you know, I've got opinions. You know, I mean, can you imagine?
Your opinions have opinions.
Exactly. So that was out the window. And then the other idea I had, which I've never done, uh-huh. and I think people are doing it now, so I've sort of, you know, there are other companies that are doing it really well, but this was about 10 years ago. I really wanted to go into making aprons for women. Really kind of wacky,
fun yes,
frilly yes. ones, over-the-top ones, you know, ones of, I don't know, but I just, not the kind of plastic ones with bosoms on, but more kind of Little House in the Prairie, but kind of more over-the-top, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that never really happened. But And then Radio Gorgeous. The idea
Radio
is
Gorgeous
came along
and took root.
Exactly, and we will have been doing it for 2 years this autumn, and the idea is that we're going to be doing crowdfunding, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to be offered things. That's what we've got to work out, what we can offer people that donate. But that's going to be a big launch because we're going to try and go live. Isn't that exciting? We're going to build a studio here. So you heard it first.
Exactly. We're off and running.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous today, my number one presenter. Thank you all so much for listening, and keep tuned and keep supporting us. Radio_Gorgeous. Love you. Goodbye. Radio Gorgeous production. Radio Gorgeous 2014. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living, barely getting by. It's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind and they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it. 9 to 5 for service and devotion. You would think that I would deserve a fair promotion. Want to move ahead, the boss won't seem to let me. I swear sometimes that man is out to get me. They let you dream just to watch him shatter. You're just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. In the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll your way. Working 9 to 5, what a way.